This is Market to Market producer Colleen Bradford Krantz. Stand by for the Market Analysis Podcast. Send us any questions or comments to markettomarket@iowapbs.org.
This is the Friday, January 10th, 2020 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. The potential for conflict with Iran and commodity traders positioning themselves for Friday's WASD dominated the markets for most of the week. The report overpowered those factors in the final hours of the last session. For the week, March wheat gained a dime. The nearby corn contract had been trending lower but ended flat in the wake of the report. The March soybean contract whipsawed its way through the week. A 13% decline in year-over-year soybean stocks helped add a nickel. March meal gained $2.30 per ton. Cotton continued a seven-week rally as the March contract gained $2.11 per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, February Class 3 milk futures fell 6 cents. The livestock sector was mixed as the February cattle contract gained $2.70, March feeders put on $4.77, and the February lean hog contract shed $1.30. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index was up 51 ticks. February crude oil dropped $3.97 per barrel. COMEX gold added $10.10 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index plummeted more than 15 points to finish at 429.15. Joining us now to offer insight on these and other trends is one of our regular analysts, Dan Huber. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Dan, we had a couple of reports, really, that happened this week, kind of non-event, maybe, and I want to get to that here, starting off with what happened in the winter wheat seedings this week. It seemed like that was a friendly sign for the markets, but we didn't really see a lot of movement on Friday.
No. And again, I don't think it was a major shocker by any stretch of the imagination. We were already looking at, what, 100-year lows as far as acreage is concerned. So, I think that just really kind of reconfirmed what was out there. And you had a little mixed news from other parts of the world. I mean, we certainly know that there's major issues in Australia, but I mean, I think that's been kind of digested into the market. Then you turn around and Argentina actually boosted, or I should say the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange boosted acreage there just a touch. So, you know, all the two just seemed to conflict with each other a little bit and kind of left us a little flat-footed, although the wheat market certainly has done well over the last month and a half. So it, I think it's finally starting to show life and recognizing that, yes, there's not perfection around the world by any stretch of the imagination.
It certainly has seen a lot of strength lately, Dan, and I think that cues us up nicely here from our question from Darren on Twitter. Funds appear to be heavily short in spring wheat. Mm-hmm. Will this market blow up at some point?
Well, you know, and of course, that's probably going to be more of an impact in the spreads. Yes, they've been short in the spring and a little long in this, or at least reducing shorts in Chicago. So I think ultimately, yes, they're going to have to come back out of those spreads. Maybe we'll start finally to bring the relationship between Chicago and Kansas City back into something a little more reasonable. But here again, too, you know, the whole delivery process on the wheat is has become a little bit skewed over the years. So it's, are those spreads more of a function, or are the relationships more of a function of just the way the spec wants to trade the spreads? It's a million-dollar question that I guess the market's going to tell us here soon.
And Dan, I think final question has got to be, where are we going to head from here? Are we going to break through that next resistance level and head higher?
You know, in longer term, I like what I've seen in the wheat recently. I think we've got some higher ground to come. That said, you know, we're pushing back up against summer spring highs. I think it's probably going to be challenging right at this point in time to, without something very positive today in this report, it's probably going to be tough to push it through at this point in time. But I think as we move out more into the spring, certainly I think this wheat market is going to, and traditionally wheat should be the one that kind of leads the way out when it comes to the grains. And I think it's finally starting to show those colors right now.
I think producers at home are probably hoping that it pulls the corn markets higher, but corn did not have any sort of an event going on in this week's report,
No.
Why did we see so much sentiment placed or importance placed on this week's report to have it be kind of a non-event?
Well, you know, the report itself, of course, is kind of the final word for this last production year, although then, you know, immediately after the report was released, the government said, well, it's not really the final word because we're going to resurvey the Northern Plains.
What do you make of that?
You know, there's probably some minor adjustments later, but I really think even down the road, I mean, we probably, I mean, granted, we keep saying this is going to be the harvest, it's going to be down, you know, this push it down the road further, it's probably probably going to be the September grain stocks before we have a great handle on last year's crop, because I don't think we've adequately reflected some of the quality issues that are out there. And you'll probably start seeing that in basis levels in certain parts of the country, because in the upper Midwest, the northern plains, we've probably got a lot of grain that will not make export grade. So there's going to be a lot of interesting moves along there. But, you know, actual crop size, yes, I think we're probably going to be well out almost to new crop before we finally get a great handle on what happened this last year. Yes, the USDA finally adjusted the acreage, harvested acreage down a little bit more, maybe not adequate enough. It was a little bit surprising to see him boost yield on corn a bushel. But that said, when you look at the world stocks were all reduced on ending stocks. You know, we're going to be under 2 billion. Psychologically, that's a good number for the U.S. So, now we'll start to reach your focus into what kind of acreage can we look at for 2020. So
it's crazy that we're in 2020, but it's crazy that we're talking about acreage for 2020.
Certainly.
Dan, what about when you look at the March and also the December contract there? Mm-hmm. We've got 385 in the March and four, a little over 402 in the Dece.
Of course, when you look at that 385, I think that is kind of the base. You know, even over the last two or three weeks here, we've gotten down to this 285 level, or 385 level, I'm sorry. And it looks like a point of value. The market tries to push below there, and we snap right back up to that level. And even today, you know, that's where we kind of came back for the close. So I think that's a foundational level, let's just say. We're going to need something to stimulate us to carry us up and away from there. But I think when you look at that $4 December corn, I think we're trying to keep enough incentive there that we don't start losing acreage as we come into the spring. So, is there a lot of upside potential from $4? You know, probably nothing. You know, a 5% rally is probably going to be a great gift here at this point in time. But, you know, until we get a better handle on the planted numbers coming in late February, of course, from the USDA, and then ultimately the prospective plantings at the end of March, you know, we're probably going to keep in this $4 plus range for December corn.
Dan, looking at the soybeans, they also had an increase in yield. It was just a half a bushel per acre.
Sure.
But again, I think that poses the question, why did the USDA change it, you know, in a way that producers weren't expecting?
Well, you know, and of course, realistically, this report is partially surveys from producers. Part of it is surveys from grain elevators and what they came across scales. So, I guess I'm not going to, you know, pick too much on how they came up with the number. I'm sure some of it's also statistical analysis. It's history technically now. It was not enough of a shift on any of those numbers to really upset the market. You know, and of course, with the soybean market, we can immediately now go back to start talking about China. You know, so it's we haven't talked about China for 3-4 days now. We need to talk about China again. So
I'm sure we certainly will in Market Plus, but I've got to ask, is it Chinese driven or something else that's continued to spur the cotton markets higher?
You know, I good question. I mean, certainly I think optimism, and there could be some more business coming into China there. Also, it could be just a situation we for so long were under such pressure, you know, never really seemed to adequately reflect, you know, what was happening in production. And yes, I think it's certainly a combination of both, weighed a little bit heavier towards the potential Chinese situation. But there's a market that's certainly one of the commodities that seems to be leading us out of the doldrums here. So
absolutely. And it's going to be interesting, too, Dan. Do you see any cotton pulling acres from corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Well, yeah, it would be easy to think we could pull it away from soybeans if we do not find something, you know, very substantial on when we ultimately find out what this phase one deal is going to entail. But, certainly in the South, I mean, granted, cotton is a very expensive crop to plant. But here again, too, it's if it can rotate some bean acreage away, that would make economic sense at this point. So
Dan, the cattle complex had quite the week, especially in the feeder cattle complex, adding 477.
Sure.
What was going on this week?
Well, you know, here again, too, I think it's a situation where the grains are dead. You know, it looks like we're going to have, if we're going to find usage for grains, it's going to be walking it to market through the livestock sector. Demand stays pretty solid. We're not seeing the slaughter numbers. I guess my caution there is that I think packers are continuing to lose margin. And I don't think we're too far off the point where they're going to start cutting back in hours, trimming, you know, whatever they can do to start pushing those margins back in, get the weights a little bit heavier. So it's, for right now, I guess if you can put animals in and hedge them off and you make money, you go ahead and continue to do it. And I think that here has certainly helped that feeder market out.
And live cattle, they've been trading in a range here. They did add some this week, but do you see them breaking out one side or the other?
You know, I think it's going to be difficult. You know, unless we see a, one of the caveats there, if we see the dollar turn lower, sharply lower, I think you could really start to stimulate some exports. The dollar is teetering on the edge. I mean, I think we probably have seen a high, but we just haven't been able to push it over the edge just yet. But, you know, when you look at the cattle market for the last month now, we've reached up to these highs. We've not been able to back away from them. But on the same token, we just can't seem to stretch any further. And I think you've got a lot of price competition with poultry and pork bulls. So it's going to be pretty difficult to see the cattle move higher without seeing the other meats, you know, come up and, be a little less competitive, I guess.
I've got to say my follow-up question to that then, Dan, is how long can we stay sustained at these higher levels?
Here again, I guess the, it's been almost a little bit counter-seasonal the way we have stuck in here. So, I'm surprised we've stayed here as long as we have, let's put it that way. But my risk out there in the feedlot, I think I would be risking that we're not going to stay here very much longer and go ahead and get things hedged up.
Okay. So. And Dan, we've got to talk about the lean hog markets. We're still seeing a big gap between the cash and the futures. Are we going to see cash catch up with the February contract in particular?
Not that we won't catch up some, but I mean, you have the proverbial problem in the livestock market that so many hogs are under contract. The packer doesn't really have to get out there and get very aggressive with them. They're pretty comfortable knowing that, you know, we've got, when you look at the hog and pig report, how many heavyweight hogs are out there right now. So I think we're going to look at historically wide basis levels just as an ongoing problem here at this point in time.
And not even only the cash is so much cheaper or so much at a discount compared to the futures, but the spread between February and the deferred also very...
A little bit wide, but that is probably not as unusual as, you know, what we're dealing with in the cash market. But certainly when you look out in the summer months, we're up towards what have been the high side of the market for the last several years. So maybe we'll finally see something come to fruition here on more pork going out of the country. I mean, and it has. We've seen a nice pickup on particularly the exports to China. I think last week, or China now has displaced Japan as our number two customer. Mexico still stands there as number one. But here again, you know, without seeing some kind of a further problems elsewhere, and granted, there was stories this morning that Germany's a little bit concerned because there was, I think 18 miles from the border, there was a case
African swine fever, right?
Showed up in Poland. So it's, you know, those type of things can certainly disrupt the logistics of the livestock market. But, you know, we almost, with 3% more hogs again this year, you know, we're almost going to need to see something like that to really think prices can get much better than they stand today.
Dan, I want to end our discussion. Last week on the show, we were sitting in a position where we thought, we don't know what's going to happen between the U.S. and Iran. Is this going to be some sort of black swan event for the market? As it sits today, I know things can change.
Certainly.
Are we factored out of any more risk-off things in the market?
I think the risk-off is probably taking care of itself at this point in time. You know, now granted, yes, something could turn for the worse there. We don't know what's going to happen with this downing of an airline, although Canada's one seems to be more impacted than we are on that one. But that said, yes, it is certainly a volatile situation. The tone seems to be that neither country really wants to escalate it further than it has. They've each kind of made their points. And, on one side of the coin, of course, you did accelerate crude oil for a while, which has turned down since. You certainly accelerated gold to the upside, which has really lifted up that commodity indexes over the last several weeks. And here again, rising tide lifts all boats. So, maybe it's not bad for all commodities.
Dan Huber, thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure.
That wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market, but we will keep this conversation going on Market Plus, where we'll answer more of your questions. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. I'm Delaney Howell, and thanks for watching.